the Wind 5K. Drink beer, support public radio. It's that simple. Pints for Public Radio, Sunday, May 17th, 2 to 4 in Ellenville. Admission is free. Cheers!
This week on This American Life, there have been so many efforts by the Trump administration this year to pry certain people away from their jobs and their communities, the lives they've built. One family decided to respond with an unexpected secret weapon.
Pull it up. You should just pull out the spreadsheet.
I can do that.
It's beautiful. It's excellent. It's a thing of beauty.
Garrett and Chrissy and their magical spreadsheet. That's this week.
This American Life, tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
If you've got an amazing record collection, but you also need to downsize, why not give it to Radio Catskill? We're always taking donations of clean vinyl in good condition for our music sale. Donate today at WJFFradio.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character, right here on WJFF Radio Catskill, broadcasting out of Liberty, New York. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and with me today is the barefoot hiker himself, Ken Posner, from Gardner, New York. Ken is originally from Chicago, but has also spent many years in New York City working on Wall Street. What he's learned is he'd much rather be in the mountains, who he said more than once when I first spoke with him, were whispering to him to come discover all they have to offer. And he did do this eventually, barefoot. Let's find out how this transpired. Here we go. Welcome to Catskill Character, Ken.
Thank you so much, Donna.
We're going to start off with Chicago. You grew up there, but aside from mentioning that New York City was worse, I quote, you moved to New York City in the 90s. You didn't really say that much about Chicago. Anything you'd like to add?
I'd just say Chicago is a little bit of a rough town, and it's got beautiful sections and great people, but it doesn't have any mountains.
Ah, yeah. And you maybe didn't identify that as such then, but that was already probably inside of you that you needed the mountains.
I think so. And my parents took us on a hike up a mountain in New Hampshire when we were 12 years old. And I think that may have been a formative experience.
You went to Yale in New Haven, and I was wondering how you liked it there.
I got a great education at Yale, and I'm very grateful for that. Although I do think the Ivy League today needs to somewhat reinvent itself. Now, I think Yale has become a little bit of the establishment, and I'd love to see them really reinvigorate their commitment to truth-seeking and radical free speech.
Well, what I'm trying to establish here is you were never really a city person, a city mouse, but rather you were always a country mouse. Would you agree with that?
Donna, the funny thing is I was in Cincinnati last week and I was walking down the street and a woman saw me and I was walking barefoot on the sidewalk and she said, "You're just like me. You're a country babe." And I said, "Well, I'm a country mouse."
Do you get called babe very often?
Not often.
Just enjoy it when you do. You did tell me that New York City was more crowded, noisier, and more intense than Chicago, but you also said it was full of energy and opportunity.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. And I moved there as a young man in search of the opportunity to start my career. And New York has that. But, you know, you can walk down the street and a billionaire could be passing you in a SUV, and then there are people who are really struggling to get by. So it's a wild mix of things.
I guess we could say you were working in the financial district down there on Wall Street. You were straddling two worlds. You bought a weekend house in Gardner, New York in 2001. And I was wondering if that was motivated by the 9/11 attacks, because you were working on Wall Street.
It wasn't per se. We had already made a commitment to spend a certain amount of time outside of the city. But the 9/11 attacks were traumatic. That was a very serious time in New York City. But we already knew we needed to be out of the city at least a certain amount of time.
I guess it's fair to say that by your 30s, the mountains were definitely calling you. What was your response to being out in Gardner, more in the country? What did you start to do?
And maybe I wasn't conscious of the mountains, but maybe they were working their magic on me. And so we started with weekend visits to the Catskills, maybe with a day hike. And then eventually we did some family camping. So nothing too extraordinary. But even way back then, I felt a strong sense that we needed to be spending some amount of time out there.
Something was telling you something.
Even if I didn't hear it, yeah. It was registering somewhere, for sure. Right.
So at this point, as you just said, you were taking these weekend camping trips with the family, but you were also getting into hiking and racing, which you told me sort of took over your life. What did you mean by that?
Well, my first racing experience was at the Escarpment Trail Run, and that's a famous race, an iconic event that Dick Vinson has been putting on for 40 years now. And I entered that race, and I had a huge amount of fun, at least until the halfway point. And then I began to realize I was using muscles to jump over rocks that I wasn't used to using, and I got a terrible case of cramps and had to basically crawl across the finish line. But that was a life-changing experience. And at that point, I wouldn't say running in the mountains had taken over my life, but I would say they became part of the formula. So in other words, you know, working in the city, I had a typical, you know, high-pressure corporate kind of job with volatile markets and competition. And so running became the way I balanced out the stress of work with a different kind of intensity, but one that was increasingly in the mountains, in the forests, and brought me something that was missing from the city experience.
I just want to go back to that race, because you were doing great for the first half, and then you had the cramping experience. Do you remember if you were thinking, okay, I can't do this. That's it. I'm done. Because you obviously didn't do that. But I was just wondering if it crossed your mind.
Well, when I got to the halfway point, I started feeling the quivers first, before the full-blown cramps had come on.
Oh, quivers. Okay.
And, you know, I had a brief Army career after college. But, you know, I learned the importance of accomplishing the mission. So there was no way I was not going to get myself to the finish line. I remember one spot I tripped on a rock, fell on the ground, and then of course, all my muscles locked up. And another runner came by and he gave me this doubtful look like, are you okay, dude? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. So I pulled myself up and made it to the finish line. It was not a glamorous or graceful experience, but I got it done. And then with that first race, I fell in love with trail running and have never looked back.
As a counterpoint to that one, your first one, is there any particular race that you ran that you'd like to tell the listener about?
Yeah, I would give a shout out to Charlie Gadol, who's the race director for Manitou's Revenge. And that is a truly epic race. It's 54 miles in the Catskills, starting on the Escarpment Trail and finishing on the Devil's Path. It is one of the most iconic races in the eastern United States. Very, very challenging. But people love it. And there's a tremendous trail running community that's grown up around that event. And so that was a great adventure. I did that once.
Only once?
Only once. The first time I didn't finish it. The second time I did finish it. But after that, I began to struggle with some injuries.
Oh.
And so that put an end to the more adventurous phase of my ultra running career.
Human beings are so very vulnerable. And I'm sure that's what you felt when you experienced that first race and then all the other races when you were injured.
Yeah, I mean, injuries are frustrating, but when you race, you're taking risk. I did recover from those injuries. They were extremely frustrating at the time. But without the risk, you wouldn't have as much of the thrill.
That's true. That's very true. You quoted the painter and the founder of the Hudson River School of Art, Thomas Cole, who wrote an essay in 1836. And here's the quote. "We are still in Eden. The wall that shuts us out of the garden is our own ignorance and folly." And I might add, that's kind of a very timely quote. But I was wondering what the significance of that quote was for you.
As I got a little bit older, I found that I needed more nature in my life. And the pressure, the constant information barrage that we live under, which I think has most of us at the red line limit to how much we can process, I think there's a cost to that. And, you know, the question is, we're still in the garden, but how do you find your way home? How do you find your way back to the garden and recover the ability to see it and hear it and recognize it and experience it?
Yeah, and that's such a battle cry for people, at least in my generation. You know, I'm thinking of the Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, where you've got to get back to the garden. What are they talking about in that song, right?
I think the question is how. You can scroll through social media and you can admire other people's pictures of mountains. I don't think that's the way back. I think the way back is physical. You need to get out there and experience nature with all of your senses. You need to move yourself. Thoreau said, we need the tonic of wildness. And he elaborated, we need to witness our own limits transgressed. In other words, we need nature to drag us out of our comfort box. That's partly how I think about it.
You know, I have a lot of friends that live in Narrowsburg and Callicoon. And when they start gardening, they're just so thrilled, just having their hands in the dirt.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of ways to reconnect with nature. You know, running and hiking is one way. Some folks love to watch birds or go foraging. The question is, how do you get on the path to go do that which you need to do?
So you told me you were looking for the garden, and obviously what you did was you started moving your body. Aside from the physical issues that you might have had, you know, injuries, did you find any other obstacles? Were you fighting yourself in any way?
I would say not so much that I was fighting myself, but to do the quantity of climbs and runs that I set out to do forced me to get out there in all the seasons of the year. And so I encountered challenges and obstacles.
Yeah.
And I think it's part of what Thoreau is saying, is part of what we need to do is be, let ourselves be dragged into positions that are difficult and require that effort. Work your way through them and you receive a fleeting moment of stillness.
Beautiful way to put it, a fleeting moment of stillness. I like that. You know, you mentioned to me that working on Wall Street, you saw a lot of your colleagues getting very ill. It's probably not the healthiest career to have. The stress, the eating probably is not good. So you found something much greater by doing the path that you've been doing. And as you moved into your 50s, your interest in your work began to, as you put it, plateau, and your experience in the mountains became more powerful for you. Wouldn't you agree?
That's right. And you know, I had the privilege of working with great people and a company with an important mission, but in work, in the business world, there can be obstacles, there can be challenges, and the opportunities that you thought were there might not turn out to be there. Mm. So frustrations arise. And then getting into my 50s, you know, I had been doing conference calls and spreadsheets and PowerPoint presentations for years and decades. But I got to this point where I was starting to feel stale. And working in my cubicle in my office, I wanted to be outside. I felt like I was suffocating. I needed more air, like I had been swimming underwater and it was time to come up and take a really big breath of fresh air to recharge my oxygen. That's when the mountains started to become very, very powerful and intense for me. And that's when I decided to take on a project that required spending a lot of time there.
Oh, that's perfect. I think we'll take a quick break here, Ken. I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character, with today's guest, hiker, runner, and seeker, Ken Posner of Gardner, New York. We'll be right back.
On this week's On the Media, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is fighting for its life.
I've never been a big fan of FEMA. It really doesn't get the job done, you know.
FEMA's a disaster.
FEMA's a dirty word.
People are waking up in droves to the FEMA camps.
Can the agency survive the stories that have been told about it? And can we survive without FEMA? Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC. This afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected. Pennsylvania's primary election is May 19th. Polls will be open 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. In order for your mail-in or civilian absentee ballot to be counted, your local county election office must have your completed ballot in hand by the time polls close. A postmark by 8 p.m. May 19th is not sufficient. This is Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and today I've been speaking with Ken Posner, the barefoot hiker. In the first half of the show, Ken told us about the gradual development of his life as a runner, hiker, and seeker of a stronger connection to nature. In the second half of the show, Ken's going to talk to us about Peak Bagging, the book that had a huge impact on his life, Born to Run by Christopher McDougall, and the book he has coming out in September entitled Chasing the Grid. Let's get to it. Ken, in 2015, you read the book Born to Run by Christopher McDougall. Please tell us about that book and why it had such a huge impact on you.
Well, Donna, you know, by the way, I believe Born to Run is the single best-selling running book of all time. And Chris McDougall's thesis was pretty simple. He said, runners are so prone to injury, it's partly due to shoes. And shoes are a technology, but they slightly alter what would be our natural gait if we ran barefoot, the way our ancestors did thousands of years ago before shoes were invented or before they were, you know, widely available. Mm-hmm. And so this was an interesting hypothesis. It caught a lot of people's attention, including mine. So what I did, and it was purely pragmatic, I decided to experiment with a little bit of barefoot running in my training practice to see if it would help me recover some natural form and reduce the risk of injuries. But the surprise to me, and it took me a few years to understand this and articulate it, the surprise was that barefoot is actually more fun. Although it's, you know, it's not necessarily all fun everywhere. Gravel and rocks and things like that can be quite difficult, but it really does make you feel like a kid again.
Interesting. I think you told me the first real hike that you did after you read Born to Run was the John Muir Trail. It's a 211-mile trail. I'd love to hear about your experience there.
Glad to share about that. And the Born to Run I ran a few years earlier. So the John Muir Trail was sort of the culmination of my practice over many years. In 2022, I completed the John Muir Trail and I did it barefoot. So it was an extraordinary experience. And it is one of the most difficult things I've done. Because on some days, the trails were sandy and I could cruise along and even cover 20 miles. But in other days in the mountains, on the mountain passes, it's all rock. And there were some days I could only get done 5 miles. And by the time I was finished and I came limping down into the small town of Lone Pine, California, my feet hurt so much I couldn't hardly sleep that night.
Oh, no.
But the next day I woke up and I had breakfast in this desert town in the Owens Lake Valley with the High Sierra on my left and the Inyo Mountains on my right. And I realized the world had become totally still and silent. And that feeling lasted for a day. And then the modern world came rushing back and my phone started beeping and everything else. But I think that was the reward for a lot of work to get that trail done.
I'm sure you don't bring your phone or you don't have your phone turned on when you're on one of your hikes or one of your runs.
Well, I actually do. And it's funny, a friend asked me once because I gradually, as I spent more time outdoors, I became more and more minimalist. So a few years back, I was out on a run on a cool fall day with some friends. And a friend said, you know, gee, Ken, you're shirtless, you have no food or water or bug spray, but you've still got a phone. And I said, yeah, I didn't want to get lost. So to me, the minimalist practice is not about eliminating all technology, but just about being mindful and choosing the tools that you need to use, but not more than you need to use. I typically carry my phone. I love to take pictures, you know, the ferns, the leaves, the flowers, the skies, the streams. So I love the pictures. And, you know, even if you're navigating without using your phone, going straight through the forest, if you do get, you know, disoriented, you'd like to be able to take the phone out and figure out where you are so that you're not spending the night out there by mistake.
Would you tell the listener, please, what peak bagging is?
Peak bagging is a recreational activity. And in every mountainous range, there is typically a list of what are considered the high peaks. So in the Catskills, there's a list of either 33 or 35 high peaks. Typically, they're 3,500 feet in elevation or higher. By the way, there's a great club called the Catskills 3500 Club, and they administer that list. So if you climb each of those peaks, you get to join the club. You get a certificate and a patch. And so it's a sort of a structure for getting out there and doing a combination of hikes. It's a structure that's socially meaningful because a lot of other people do it. And there's a community built around, you know, this particular challenge. Mm-hmm. So that's what peak bagging is. And I think every mountainous region in the U.S. has a list of high peaks that people aspire to climb over some period of time.
Okay, so peak bagging is more of a recreational pursuit, but the journey that you've been on seems to me to be more of a spiritual one than recreational. Do you feel that you have a stronger sense of self since you began this journey?
Well, what I would say I discovered by spending a lot of time in the mountains on these, you know, peak bagging projects, as I spent more and more time out in the mountains, I became aware of different aspects of myself, so to speak. So in the city, at work, in the modern world, I feel like a lot of us become very defensive and we define ourselves relative to what our bosses are asking us to do or all the rules we're supposed to follow and whether we agree with this group of people or that group of people. But when you're out in the mountains, that kind of noise starts to quiet because it's not relevant. And I found anyhow that there was perhaps a more primitive way of relating to my environment, which was feeling that sense of connection. And especially going barefoot, because that reduces you from a high-tech super charging hiker to being close to just another animal in the forest. And you start to look at the other animals as more as peers instead of, you know, objects that are out there. You start losing this attitude that, well, I'm a human being, so that makes me superior to a squirrel.
Yeah.
Okay, congratulations. You're bigger and smarter than a squirrel. But out in the forest, we're all animals just trying to get by.
Yeah.
It was a different kind of feeling.
Thank you very much for that. We are running short of time, but I want to make sure that we talk about the book that you've been working on for the last 6 years, and in September of 2025, this year, Chasing the Grid, which is the name of your book, is going to be released. What would you like the listener to understand about this book and the experience that you've had bringing it to life?
Well, a couple of things, Donna, and I'm very excited to be, you know, sharing this part of my story. Part of it is the importance of nature. And so the book has a lot of adventurers running and hiking in the mountains, and sometimes they go well and sometimes they don't. But the book also chronicles a point in my life where, like I said, that formula had broken down. I was injured. I couldn't run. Work was sort of plateauing. So I took on this big peak bagging project, which is called The Grid. And I devoted almost 2 years to completing it. And that's where I really began to learn more about myself. And that's where I began to change pretty dramatically in ways that I seem to have stayed changed. So the barefoot is one example of a practice that I really developed from that 2 years, spending that 2 years in the mountains.
What's another big change that you've noticed in yourself?
Well, you know, I was talking a second ago about how defensive we all get in the modern world, because we're assailed, you know, every second of the day almost by people telling us what we should think, what we should say, what's good for us, what's bad for us, what we should wear. And I feel like our sense of self in the modern world gets very inflamed and irritated, and we end up feeling defensive, and we end up lashing out, we end up blaming, we end up getting frustrated and angry at other people. And when you're in the forest, you realize, hey, that's a property of life. You can see a clearing with, you know, 1,000 tiny little trees, and, you know, none of them are going to necessarily make it, maybe one or two. So there's intense competition everywhere. But if you see the beauty in the forest, even where there's intense competition between life forms, maybe you can take a step back into our modern world and instead of getting angry at other people, say, okay, there is a difference, but maybe I could understand where they're coming from instead of just instinctively lashing, you know, out. So that's something I've learned, and I try to practice it, and I'm not always perfect. I blame and lash out too, but then I remind myself, hey, you know, that's not what I learned. I learned to try to understand.
Ken, I don't know. I don't even know if I should air this show and have people find out about your book, because I'm a psychotherapist, and I think that if people read your book, you're going to put me out of business. Seriously.
I don't think so, Donna. I think you and I together can win over more people to this way of thinking.
Oh, that's great. I think you're right. Let's tell the listener what your website is, Ken.
The website's very easy to find. It's www.barefootken.com.
Perfect.
And from there, you can find my blog and social media and other ways to connect.
And I read a lot of your blog. It's really fantastic. I recommend
it
to the listener. And Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's really been an education. Good luck with your book. I can't wait to get it. And just thank you so much for coming on.
Donna, you're so welcome. And thank you. I really appreciate the chance to share a little bit of these thoughts. Thank you.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today has been the barefoot hiker, Ken Posner. As he just said, Ken's website is barefootken.com. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Be sure to join us then for more fascinating stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Last week on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Hari Kondabolu was all for putting toys back in kids' cereal boxes, but he wanted more.
I love that they brought the toys back, but I've always felt that adult cereals should have, like, things in them, too.
Yeah.
Like Viagra or Lipitor.
I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we turned the tables on Jeopardy host Ken Jennings by asking him questions in the form of a question. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Heights for Public Radio is back. Join Radio Catskills Sunday, May 17th from 2 to 4 at the Common Good on Canal Street in Ellenville, right after the Ellenville Run Like the Wind 5K. Drink beer, support public radio. It's that simple. Heights for Public Radio, Sunday, May 17th, 2 to 4 in Ellenville. Admission is free. Cheers.
Hey there, it's Jason Dole letting you know that Radio Catskill's Music Yard Sale returns Saturday, May 23rd, and this is the time to make your musical donation. If you're spring cleaning and come across vinyl records in good condition, or CDs, stereo equipment, instruments, cassettes, donate them to us. Get a little extra space for yourself and support a great cause. Make your musical donation to the Music Yard Sale, May 23rd at Radio Catskill in Liberty. Info at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.